Wake Up Call continues now on the Sports Map Radio Network.
Time for the good.
That's really nice.
The bad.
That's the bad guy.
And the dumb.
What an idiot. Oh, what a loser.
All right, it's the good, the bad, and the dumb as we continue it as Wake Up Call Sports Map Radio. Let's get your Friday going. Let's get your weekend started. Let's make you feel good. The good of the day.
The good of the day. Changes to the SEC could be coming.
All right.
Yeah. And, I mean, the only reason why I'm bringing them up as the good of the day, because you know what? With any sort of change, people aren't going to like it.
Right.
But it's a change that you would probably see affecting all of college football, because I kind of think the SEC is the trendsetter of college football.
That is kind of the thing, right?
Yeah. I
mean, it's like the SEC does it, like, eh, maybe we should do it.
So next, or not next year, was it 2024?
2024, yep.
Is when Texas and Oklahoma joined the...
That's the plan.
That's the plan, or at least that, you know, not written in stone just yet, but that's the idea. But when they join, they're going to have 16 teams. Now, there's a proposal out there to create four-team pods. Not really divisions, pods. And that way you can keep traditional rivalries and stuff like that. But Greg Sankey has a different idea. And he's kind of looking at it from this standpoint of what's going on this season. He doesn't want any divisions. He just wants one straight up and down 16 team division.
Yeah, and I what is the thought process behind
I think the thought process, or what's kind of motivating him, is that regardless of what happens over the next 2 weeks, it's going to be Georgia versus LSU, despite the fact that Tennessee throttled LSU.
Right. So what
and
he's
so
saying
going
is,
into, you know, going into the SEC Conference Championship, it should be a rematch between Georgia and Tennessee.
That's exactly how the Pac-12 does it with not as many teams.
Right.
Right. So and the Big 12 does it the same way. There's no divisions, so there's no division winners, so you don't have a limping team coming in. USC is going to play Oregon. That's it. They're the top two teams in the conference. They are playing against each other. The ACC still does divisions, but I think they're moving away from that too. Because again, you can have one team that's outstanding, nationally ranked, unbeaten, or whatnot, but their opponent could come from a division where there's some attrition that ate each other up, and all of a sudden you're not getting that level quality opponent in the title game. And I think that's where Greg Sankey is seeing the flaw. In Greg Sankey's world, he would love to see Tennessee in the SEC title game this week, next week, a couple weeks against Georgia, and win that game.
Yeah.
And force the committee with two one-loss teams to get both of them in the playoff. Yeah, that's a smart way to do it. I think the four-pod thing is silly if it doesn't have any meat on the other end of it.
Well, I mean, the only idea I came up with then is like, okay, you're going to have semifinals leading to a finals?
Yeah, it doesn't make much sense. Like, what's the point in having a division if the division does, in the end, the division won't mean anything? So, like, you can divide people up any way you want. You can divide, you know, divisions. But if you say, look, we have these divisions, but just because you win your division doesn't mean you're going to play for the SEC championship. We're just going to take the two best teams. Well, then what's the point in having a division? Right? Like the purpose of having a division is something to win. Right. And that's kind of the thing. But I absolutely know where he's coming from.
I mean, yeah. And I feel like during like the early 2000s into the 2010s, when Nick Saban first took over Alabama, the two best teams were always out of the West.
Right. Yeah.
You know, the East was kind of just dragging along. So it was like, you know, all of a sudden you had, well, we got a West team and we have to have an East team because that's the way it is.
Yeah. Outside of like Florida.
That was, right.
You know, there wasn't. I mean, why? Look, you know, I remember arguing with one of my SEC friends, coworker of mine, and I said, look, we both love the SEC. We both went to SEC schools. He loves Alabama. He loved Alabama. And I said, but we have a hubris about us because Missouri and Johnny Manziel at Texas A&M made an impact the second they got there. Like Missouri joined the conference. They were playing in the SEC title game.
Yeah.
A couple of times. And Johnny Manziel won the Heisman Trophy. So like there is a sense of like, it's not only better here, it's like exponentially better here. And the Greg Sankey is trying to like, he wants to remind the rest of the college football world that's the case, but he can't do it because Tennessee has to sit on the bench on the third. Like they can't play. So he wants them to play. And that makes sense. It makes sense because if LSU wins the SEC championship game, there's no guarantee that they're going to go as a two-loss team. But Georgia is.
Right.
Like, if Georgia closes out, wins the rest of their games where they should, they got Kentucky this weekend in Lexington, they got Georgia Tech, and if they lose to LSU, it doesn't matter. If they go in undefeated on the third to Atlanta, they're getting in no matter what. But he's like, boy, I want a situation where I get two in. That of course I do.
So and he knows that it's, you know, I mean, even though there's an outside chance, like, you know, we're looking at it going, well, there's a possibility if this happens, yeah, if this happens, that you can get three SEC teams in there. It's not going to happen.
It's,
I mean, the committee
happen.
Still is going to be like, well, we can't do that.
I'm telling you, you're right. That's the whole thing. Like, if you just threw it into a computer, and the computer might spit out that combination,
yeah,
but human beings are not going to spit out that combination.
No, not at all.
They will tear that. They will tear that committee.
And we're
down
back to BCS days.
They're going to start all over again if that ever happened. All right, what's the dumb of the day?
Oh no, we're at the bad.
Oh, the bad. I'm sorry.
The bad of the day. You ready? Sitting
yes.
down.
Yes.
Details of Brittany Griner's new prisons.
Oh boy.
Are out, and they sound horrific.
Oh boy.
So apparently, she has been moved to a penal colony in the Russian region of Mordovia, which is about 300 miles south of Moscow. No official word that this is where she has been moved. This is just what kind of like her lawyers, I guess, have been told through back channel communication type of deals that that's where she's moving. And this penal colony is known as described as a rat infested sweatshop.
Oh, good Lord. Oh, my
so,
God.
Prisoners there have lost fingers, Tony, due to long hours of forced labor at sewing machines. They usually will work 12 to 16 hours per day, just given lunch breaks and bathroom breaks. And if they do not fill their quotas, they are beaten.
Oh, my God. Oh, my God.
Yeah. This is a reminder to everyone out there. Russia is different than us. Like, you know, if we had that going on in the United States, I mean, that prison would be shut down
in a second. I know. It would be so, there would be so many lawsuits. From
oh, my God.
It would just be not even, you wouldn't even be able to fight the battle of trying to keep a place like that open. Unbelievable. Like, I'm, okay, outside of like, I don't know, Ray Carruth, right? Like where somebody like committed murder or something. Just
right.
take that. But I'm talking like innocent mistake. Is this the worst mistake an athlete has ever made?
Yeah.
Right?
I think so.
Like, again, like outside of killing somebody, like she packed cannabis oil in her suitcase and is now sewing garments for the next 9 years for 16 hours a day in a rat infested prison.
Right. And if she doesn't meet her quota that day, she will be beaten.
Yeah.
And you know, like they said, I mean, you know, it's like because it works so hard and so much that, you know, some prisoners have lost their fingers.
I can't even imagine
what that would be like.
I know she went before the war. I know she went before. She was going over there before he invaded Ukraine because it was
right.
early February. But did she have anybody in her camp that said, you know, don't go over there this year. Just don't. I'm just hearing things. There's rumors. There's all sorts of unrest. Stay home. Just stay home. Because this one decision, that's it. It's over. It's over. Like she's, and you know what's sad? What is psychologically, what is she going to be when she does, if she does get home? Like let's say she's there for 2 years doing this.
Yeah.
Like let's say, because these things take forever. That is the one lesson I think a lot of people learned about this. They're like, well, Joe Biden should just call and get her. No, it doesn't work that way.
Nope.
It does not work that way. And they don't even have to tell you where she is. Like that, like you just said, her lawyer is hearing it through back channels.
Yeah.
Like people who are
it's
like,
not,
I think I got it. I'm going to tell you. I think
it's
I know
not the Moscow government going like, hey,
yeah.
guys, by the way, we moved Brittany Griner to this
yeah,
cell.
We don't even know
prison.
Where she is. We're not 100% sure where she is. This is how people disappear in these systems. And you forget about them as a country. I'm serious. That's
yeah.
Like, I know you can disagree with her politics and stuff, but just the idea of like that one decision to pack cannabis oil without understanding where she was going.
And it wasn't even that much either. I mean,
not even that
you
much.
Know, like people always say, it's like, duh, that wouldn't even be a misdemeanor in the United States. And it's like, well, again, it's not the United States.
Again, it's not all of these things. Like it's, I know it's hard to do. It's like when you're born to wealth, right?
Yeah.
You're just like, your parents are billionaires and you never want for anything. And it's like, you know, you've taken private jets wherever you go, and you just cannot for the life of you understand somebody that is complaining about sitting, you know, somebody's complaining about something, about working. You just, there's nothing to relate to, right? Like, there's nothing, you can't relate to it. We just cannot relate to the idea that they don't have to do anything, because we live in a system where that wouldn't happen. If your relative was taken into custody and was arrested for something, and they said, "All right, I'm guilty," and you and then the answer to the parent, to the parents or family, friends, whatever, was, "We've taken Junior, and you will never know where he is. We're not telling you where he is." We'd be like, "Well, I'm on the phone with my lawyer tomorrow. We're going to file this, and we're going to file that, and we're going to go through this process, because that's the life we live. And then when we think of 16 hours a day sewing garments together for nothing and in a rat infested, we'd go,
"Well, she does." They do earn a little bit of money. They earn a little bit of money, but it works out.
But it's
to
like
be,
jail money.
Like, it's like 100 rubles split between 20 people.
Oh, I got you. Buy toothpaste.
Yeah, I don't even know how much a ruble is worth.
We are not connected to this idea. And the other thing too, I know we got to get to the dumb. The other thing too, always remember this. It goes back to that 90s, that kid that got caned, right?
Yep.
The other thing the government has to do over there, and it doesn't matter where you are, is they have to protect their own rule.
Yeah.
Right? That kid got caned for the graffiti, right? Because that's the punishment over there. And if they had let him go and said, "Yeah, you know what? He can go home." The people in that country would have been, wait, why? Why did you do that? Why did you do that? Why did my son get caned? Why did my relative get caned? Why was he thrown in prison? Why was he taken to a sweatshop? Why? All of those things, they just don't let them go because they feel nice. They have to look at their own citizens and go, this is what we've decided. So there's a lot of politics at play, and there's a lot of things I don't think people are grasping. But yeah. All right, we gotta get to the dumb of the day.
Let's carry it over.
Okay, let's carry that over, because it's a deeper one.
Yeah, well, there's
you know, several. I like the deeper stuff.
It's several of them, and it all has to deal with Cutter.
All right, let's do that when we come back. The dumb, and it involves the World Cup, which starts, this weekend?
Is it Sunday.
Sunday.
You're going to love what I'm going to talk about.
Can't wait for this. Can't wait for this when we continue. It's Wake Up Call.
This is Wake Up Call on the SportsMap Radio Network. Alongside Ron Culver, here's Tony D.
All right, we're continuing the good, the bad, and the dumb, because we got a lot of dumb to get to from the World Cup that starts Sunday in Qatar. All right, so let's get it. What is the dumb of the day?
Well, I'm going to leave it up to you, because there's two stories coming out of Qatar, right?
Oh, boy.
You want to talk about beer or match fixing?
Why don't we do both? Let's start with beer. Yeah, match fixing. Can't wait to get to that one.
So the beer controversy, we've talked about it before, that, you know, first Qatar was going to ban beer sales completely. Then they decided, no, you know, we'll have beer. We'll just have beer tents. And then they said, well, you know, the beer tents a little too visible. You got to put them in like the back alley. We don't want them. You know, we really don't want the public to see the beer tents. And now Qatar is, you know, 3 days away from the start of the World Cup. And they're like, no, you know, we're going to ban beer altogether.
Should never, ever been any part of this at all.
And oh, that is a breach of contract with Budweiser, or FIFA. FIFA is in a breach of contract with Budweiser, to which Qatar probably is like, I don't care. Here's a billion.
Where are you going to go? What are you going to do?
Yeah.
What are you going to do?
So it looks like it's going to be more and more a dry World Cup.
I am watching that FIFA documentary on Netflix, and it is unbelievably fascinating. It is crazy, crazy.
Yeah.
That all broke and how it went down. So the part about the Qatar getting the World Cup, there was one woman, she was part of the Qatar 2022 campaign back in 2009. She got kicked out of the country. When she got kicked out of the country, she started speaking about what they did, and she was like, all we did was we just promised money to these people's football federations, right? We said, oh, we'll give you $1 million or $1.5 million, your football federations. But I have a question, like, this kind of thing, like, when you, like, so if you're FIFA, and again, bribery changes everything, right? But do they not sit down and go, hey, you know what? We've got multi-million dollar sponsorships here, that, and we need to make sure that you're a country that would allow these products to be utilized. Just curious. Just curious.
Yeah.
You know, like, that's absolutely insane. Oh, my goodness.
It's just one thing. You know, it's weird, though, because it's always just one story after another coming out of this place.
Yeah, I
don't even know what to think. And you're going to love the match-fixing one. So the game kicks off Sunday. Traditionally, in every World Cup, the home team plays the first match.
Right.
Right? Okay. That's how it's been for years and years and years. And that usually is the only match of that day. And that's the case here. Qatar will play Ecuador. It's the only match come Sunday. Then the World Cup really kicks into gear starting Monday. Qatar is not known as a soccer powerhouse country.
Yeah, I don't know if you're aware of that. Yeah, when I ask if they're good, I don't mean like Germany good, but are they decent?
I really have no idea. I would think, this is me personally, like if Brazil was to play Qatar, the final score would probably be somewhere like around 5-0, 6-0 type of thing, right? But they are not playing Brazil. They are playing Ecuador. Now, Ecuador is not a huge powerhouse South American country, but they are a good soccer country. It's one, you know, it's obviously their main sport. Apparently, some of the Qatari officials or sheiks, if you will, the royal family, whoever's in charge of Qatar, have paid 8 Ecuadorian players a little under $8 million to throw the first game.
Oh, see, there's no scruples here. I don't even know what to say.
Now, it's not 100% confirmed. It's 5 Qatari and Ecuador insiders have talked about this. You know, so you still hope that the story is false. But at the same time, it wouldn't surprise me. And that's the larger issue here. I wouldn't be surprised if some of these teams are like, oh, you know what? I'm making $8 million, which is more for one game, which is more than I make in a year. Why wouldn't I? I don't know.
Ugh.
So, yeah. Because, I mean, the other thing, too, is that in the World Cup, it's when South Africa hosted, they were the first one not to do this. But usually the host country makes it out of the group stage and into the knockout round. And South Africa was the first one not to do it. No one is expecting Qatar to be, you know, part of that.
Is there a built-in advantage at being at home? Like, do you get put in an easier group? Like, do you get to pick up groups? Like, is there something that says that trend can? I mean, it's one thing to say, well, we get to play at home.
The advantage to it is this, right? When they're seeding the pots, when they're seeding the groups, they go into the pot with the top-ranked teams.
Okay.
Because, you know, we know that they're going to go into Group A. It's always they go into Group A. But they won't play in group stage. They're not going to play Brazil, Argentina, England, Germany. It's impossible for them to play them because they're all coming from one pot. So then it is kind of easier because then if you do get a European team, you're getting like a lower-tier European team.
I got it.
They didn't really get a lower-tier European team this time around because I think they're playing the Netherlands are in their group. So all you got to do is finish top two. And,
right.
You know, and so
there isn't a, well, the home team gets its choice or the home team gets this. There's nothing like set in stone that says we give the home team this little advantage. It just worked out that way that the home teams.
Right. The advantage is that they're not getting a huge powerhouse team.
Got it.
You know, a lot of groups, you know, a lot of times you'll get like a huge powerhouse team and then you're getting the second team. It's still a really, really good team. So it makes it kind of, you're like looking at those two teams are going to move on.
So in this FIFA documentary, this woman that left and she reported all of this like payments, right? The thing that sprung open this whole thing, they had the guy from Qatar that was in charge of, like, he was the lead guy on the team that was making the pitch, whatever his job was. And even for this documentary, he sits down for this documentary and he goes, everything she said is false. Everything she's, and it's like, it's the most unbelievable statement I've ever, like there is, like, I know he can't admit on camera, like, yeah, we did, but he's like, everything she said is false. As if to try to convince the world that this country got this little tiny country with no infrastructure for soccer was going to have to build everything from scratch. This little country that did not have enough hotel rooms, that did not have stadiums, one beat out the rest of the people, rest of the countries that
recruited people from other countries to build their stadiums.
He's just like, it came through the goodness of our pitch. Like that, yeah. Like we sold it correctly. Like we said,
well, that was the rumor too, that Sepp Blatter, who was the president of FIFA, his dream was to have under his reign for a World Cup to be hosted in every one of the regions.
Right.
You know, minus Antarctica, obviously. But, you know, and so it is. You know, I mean, he brought the World Cup to Africa for the first time ever. Now he's bringing it to the Middle East for the first time ever.
Like, imagine if you went to the Academy Awards in the 90s and they were like, up for Best Actor, Jack Nicholson, Michael Douglas, Leonardo DiCaprio, Pauly Shore.
Right.
And then they went, and the winner is Pauly Shore. Wouldn't you say, I think something's not quite right there. Encino Man was a good movie, but I'm not 100% sure that was something that was better than what Jack Nicholas produced on screen. Like, when he went up there and he was like, Qatar! Like, there must have been people going,
wait, what?
What? And then just the first thought, oh, Jesus, they bought it. They bought this. Not one person went, oh, my God, their pitch worked. They were successful in selling their country
because it
over the United States of America.
Because when Qatar won, it immediately went to, what's it called, the FIFA scandal.
Yeah,
where
right.
all the top guys were arrested. Like, they showed up to work one day in Switzerland, and it was like, nope, you come with me, you come with me, you come with me. You're
unbelievable. This, well, what did we say earlier? Let's just get to the soccer.
Sports washing, let it begin.